Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Good evening, everybody. What's going on? Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd for show 77 here at 7 p.m. Sean, we might want to go buy a lottery ticket.
Yeah, triple sevens. It was definitely triple sevens for one of our favorite teams. Of course, we had a big game this past weekend up in Seattle. NFL's what we're talking about, of course, is the Oakland Raiders going up the 0-7 at the time. Oakland Raiders going up to the Clink CenturyLink Field in Seattle. And Sean Wally, man, it was a little bit better than we thought.
Yeah, it definitely became a contest in the second half. You know, for a while it was 24-3, and everybody's like, uh-oh, here we go. But that's why they play the entire 60 minutes, and a few things bounced the Raiders' way, and they found some offense and made a game of it, made it interesting in the end.
You know, the tail of the tape, of course, we talk about this all the time. Just like coaches prepare their teams, they say that the only way that you can win are all three phases of the game, and that is offense, defense, and special teams, and you just want to be able to control the ball. Well, you know, the Oakland Raiders came out and their defense played well. Their offense was a little anemic in the first half. The biggest thing was turnovers. And, of course, you cannot win a football game with turnovers, and the Raiders had plenty. Of course, 3-0 in favor of the Oakland Raiders, having three turnovers, two interceptions by Derek Carr, and then, of course, a fumble by one kickoff returner. And TJ Carey, and then after that, the Raiders had to play comeback.
Yeah, there were too many mistakes by the Raiders, and when you're a young team, when you're a struggling team, those things seem to get magnified. And, you know, in the end, they made a game of it, and they had a shot with the onside kick in the inside of 2 minutes, and you just have to wonder how that game would have turned out had there not been those two interceptions, the fumble. And you look at a guy on Seattle that is kind of the unsung hero. He didn't do much on the stat sheet, and that is one Jermaine Kearse. He recovers that onside kick, saves the day for the Seahawks. He's the one that punched the kick return. He punched the ball to make that fumble happen. So he did the little things that came up big for Seattle.
You know, and that's one of the things that, you know, as a coach, you have to applaud. You know, it's not always the big plays. It's not always, you know, the things that are glaring that we can see. It's the little things. And Jermaine Kearse, of course, being there, as you said, Johnny on the spot as far as the onside kick late in the fourth quarter. That was very, very pivotal. You can see the momentum actually shifting once the Raiders scored. And, of course, there's Jermaine, picking up the fumble recovery. One of the other things is that what Tony Sperano talks about, and he's been talking about this in the interviews, is he talks about, you know, Oakland beating Oakland. And when you have three turnovers like we did yesterday, that's Oakland beating Oakland. And you have to, you know, fight your way out of it. The other thing is, of course, with DJ Hayden coming back in his first stint back from injuries, and of course this is his second year, and last year he was out for a period of time for health and other injuries. You know, DJ Hayden having some penalties, and not just DJ, but, you know, other players as well, untimely penalties. And the biggest thing is when you have a team like Seattle to get off of the field in a three and out situation, that is bonus. You can't have a third down and then you make a stop and then you have a penalty such as an unsportsmanlike or a taunting, even though I just think that was just the most bogus call that I've ever seen. I've seen worse. I'll just put it that way. But, you know, when you're doing things like that, you can't get out of your own way and then you wind up with a record like you have at 0-8.
So, yeah, there are definitely things that the Raiders can take away as positives and build on and not necessarily hang their heads. Yes, they are 0-8, haven't won in just about a calendar year, but there seem to be some positives and some progress on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm kind of curious with you being up in the Pacific Northwest, what is the talk? And, you know, of course, you know, having a lot of Facebook friends that are Seahawks fans, a lot that are 49er fans. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. And, of course, my beloved Raider Nation, who I stay contacted with on a daily. What was the buzz up in Seattle the day after? You know, this was supposed to be a game that, you know, wasn't supposed to be close. You know, as a matter of fact, Vegas had a 15-point spread that I knew wouldn't stick. And, you know, so what is the vibe up there?
Well, you've got almost two camps. You've got some people ready to jump off the bridge saying, you know what, you barely beat the Raiders who haven't won in a year. This is ridiculous. The Seahawks aren't even going to make the playoffs. Well, using that logic, okay, then New England and the Colts aren't going to either because the Raiders played them fairly close within one score as well. And really, a win is a win. And in this league, as the Seahawks are learning, when you are on the top of the peak and you're at the pinnacle, the Super Bowl champions, you're getting everybody's best shot every single Sunday or Monday or Thursday, whatever it may be. And they're finding out that it doesn't matter whether the team coming in is 0-7 or 7-0. It's going to be a dogfight.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I know that the 12th man was up there scoreboard watching the game that I worked yesterday. Started out at a 105 kickoff, and of course the Oakland game that you were working was a 125 kickoff. I know there's a little bit of scoreboard watching as the St. Louis Rams had closed the gap and then, you know, took the lead late, which was late in the fourth quarter at your game.
Yeah, and that was one of my duties in the graphics truck for CBS was keeping an eye on that St. Louis 49er game because it was hard to fathom that it was 13-10 St. Louis, number one, a low-scoring game. Number two, you've got the Niners, you know, at the goal line. They're on the one-yard line. All they have to do is punch it in or at the very least kick a field goal to tie it and go to overtime. Yet neither of those things happened.
You know, and it was an excellent ball game, to be honest with you. I mean, of course, would beg to differ, and they would point out a few things that went wrong. The last two plays of the game were very, I would say, heightened and controversial, if you will. There was a pass and catch with Colin Kaepernick to Michael Crabtree that landed Crabtree just outside of the end zone. So his feet were in the end zone, and he fell forward and landed at the one. They had to take a look at that under instant replay, and found that he didn't cross the plane in the end zone, which left the call that you're talking about, you know, which is a controversial call. And, you know, the thing is once the officials call it one way, it's hard to overturn. And so Colin Kaepernick receives the snap on a quarterback sneak and actually never really received it fully. The ball was bobbled, and then he tries to make an attempt to go across the plane, but those big bodies in there, you really couldn't see. The only thing that we could see was that the ball came out before his knee touched the ground. And, of course, Laurinaitis came up with the football, and the rest is history. Just a horrible turn of events for the San Francisco 49ers, of dropping them to 4-4 on the season. And of course, you know, with the Seattle Seahawks, that gains a little bit of separation, putting your guys up I believe the Seahawks are 5-3, but both teams are looking up at the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, those Cardinals just keep on winning. They took advantage of Tony Romo not playing and injured with his ongoing back problems, and they went down to Dallas and took care of business, and they are proving that they may very well be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, I'm sure that once these, you know, the Cardinals are they're hitting their stride, they're finding, you know, some momentum going here, and of course they're sitting two games up. You know, the biggest thing is just, you know, at some point, you guys are going to have to play each other. I mean, Seattle has to play Arizona and San Francisco and, you know, see what happens from there. But, you know, when you think about it, the Arizona Cardinals are playing good football. I don't see them getting swept by, you know, either San Francisco or Seattle. But at the same time, you know, who knows? I mean, there's a whole half of the season to be played. But right now, you're right, the Arizona Cardinals are playing some great football.
And getting back to yesterday's game in Seattle, the Raiders-Seahawks, you know, you have to question, what is the issue with Oakland's running game? You know, they've got decent running backs with Darren McFadden and Marcel Reese and Maurice Jones-Drew, yet they only had 16 carries between the three of them.
Yeah, you know, that is the biggest mystery. And you know, as far as the running game is concerned, a lot of that could be predicated on the, you know, the blocking up front. You know, Adam gets the ball. It just seems like to me lately he hasn't been able to see the hole. So I believe that there's a hole there. He's just used to just, you know, just running up the back of his blocker and just falling down, you know, and getting clipped up by cleats or the ground or whatever. Maurice Jones-Drew, of course, coming off of injury, you know, he's been sitting a while, and, you know, it was odd to see late in the game that he was, you know, when the Raiders got down to the goal line, that he was actually in the game. I thought something was wrong with Darren McFadden, but come to find out there wasn't. You know, Maurice Jones-Drew receives a screen pass that gets the, you know, gets the Raiders down near that gets him down to the 1 yard line. Of course, you know, Derek Carr throws the pass to Rivera to bring the Raiders to win six at that time. But, you know, I wonder what the Raider Nation wants to know, though, Sean Wally, is this: where in the world is Latavius Murray? I believe Latavius Murray, he was I don't have it in front. I believe it was a fourth round pick a couple of years ago. And, you know, this guy is going to be the next great thing, and he can hardly get on the field. Yesterday he caught a pass where I believe 7 yards was definitely positive. But what in the world is going on, and why is he in the doghouse, and why can't he get on the field?
You know, I remember him from the preseason game that Oakland took care of the right. Seahawks down there in August. And, you know, he's been very speedy and doing good things. And it almost seems like it's a parallel situation with what's going on in Seattle with Christian Michael, who was drafted last year, yet doesn't get on the field much, isn't always active every week to play in the games. And, you know, he did get a few carries yesterday in Michael with the Seahawks, but, you know, maybe there's just some issues with blocking, picking up all the plays, understanding what to do in every situation.
Right.
You know, it just seems like those are two guys that should be on the field, and for some reason they're not.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is we're going to open up the phone lines, 888-429-5471. Again, the number is 888-429-5471. Give us a call. Let us know what you are thinking about as far as that game up in the Pacific Northwest yesterday. Again, 888-429-5471. And, hey, Sean, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was you know, that of Marshawn Lynch. Of course, Marshawn didn't have the greatest of games when you're talking about the amount of yardage that he ran. I believe he ran for about 67 yards and 21 carries, but he did have two touchdowns. One of the things that I'm hearing from the 12th man is what in the world is going on as far as, you know, when getting into the end zone, he's not doing a celebration. He's just kind of dropping the ball or handing the ball to the referee to the sidelines. What do you make of that?
I hadn't heard any of that chatter, but Marshawn's never been a showboater. Marshawn's never been a Sean Alexander type that always, you know, thought up various celebrations in the end zone. You know, he does his thing. He lets the Skittles rain down on him, and hopefully he gets back to the bench and has a few of them. And, you know, he did rush for 67 yards on 21 carries, but the key there is 21 carries. They made a concerted effort to get him the ball 20 times, but then you also add in the dual threat of receiving. He had 76 receiving yards for a grand total of 143 all-purpose yards, so Marshawn Lynch was definitely a factor in Seattle on Sunday.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he was the leading receiver for the Seahawks, which, you know, of course, if a running back is your leading receiver, I mean, that happens from time to time. But when you're talking about a balanced offense like the Seattle Seahawks like to portray, that's something that, you know, the Raiders can actually hang their hats on as far as showing some pretty good defense. And of course, in the second half, the Oakland Raiders outscored the Seahawks 21-6, you know, 14 points in the third, seven in the fourth. And, you know, I know there's a little bit of concern going on, but at you were saying, a win is a win. You take that with a grain of salt, and you live to see another day and look forward to the next game.
You know, Sean, one thing that was interesting on the offensive side of the ball for the Seahawks, especially third quarter, early to mid-third quarter before the game got tight, Russell Wilson ended with 35 pass attempts. You would think they would have wanted to run the ball more, especially when they're up 24-3. And you've got three pretty good running backs. You could rotate in there with Lynch, Robert Turbin, and Christian Michael. And you could just ground and pound and then occasionally run some play action. And they didn't really do that. Turbin had five carries for 35 yards, which is a great average, seven a carry. So you would think he would get the ball a little bit more. And especially when Wilson himself after the game said, for whatever reason, I didn't play well. I had a bad game.
Yeah, and you mentioned 35 attempts at passing. That's quite a bit, you know, when you're passing the ball. I believe, you know, Russell was just a little right of about 50% on his passing. So it could have been a little bit better. But 38, you know, carries for, you know, Seattle rushing, that's a great balance when you're when you look at, you know, the offense. And so, you know, I think that Seattle stood pat with their game plan. Of course, it was pouring down rain, and who saw that coming? I mean, you know, it sounded like the, you know, the skies had parted just before kickoff, and then, you know, when kickoff happens, you know, the rain comes down and it stayed constant. But, you know, Seattle did a very good job. They did a very good job of mixing it up. You know, of course, you know, you mentioned Lynch having a high total of carries of 21, and so, you know, I guess the big question is, you know, what was the accuracy like of Russell Wilson? Was a lot of this his fault, or was he just missing his targets?
He was off on his throws, and who knows how much the rain played a factor in that. And listening to Pete Carroll this morning on 710 ESPN Seattle, he even said, you know, he just missed some throws he normally doesn't, and that's going to happen from time to time. And he didn't do anything too egregious that cost him the game or anything, but he wasn't nearly as sharp as 12th man fans know he can be.
Now, you know, of course, on the other side of the football, Derek Carr had a very struggled the first half. Didn't have first half at all. Of course, throwing two picks. Of course, Turbin running back, which was, I believe, no, I'm sorry, was it Turbin? No, Irvin. Irvin ran the touchdown back, 35 yards for a score. And, of course, you know, going into the first half, you're thinking that maybe, you know, this is going to be a bad game for Derek Carr, but then Derek turns it around and, you know, has a pretty good second half. And so, you know, when you're looking at the type of play that Derek Carr has, I mean, what say you as far as, you know, a rookie coming into Oakland or going into CenturyLink and, you know, playing a pretty decent football game in front of the 12th man?
Well, yeah, I mean, look at it. He had more yards than Russell Wilson. Granted, they were behind the entire game, and outside of their first field goal going up 3-0, you know, he had 41 attempts, 24 completions, two touchdowns, two picks. The interception that you mentioned by Bruce Irvin was just Irvin again showing how great he is athletically and just some of the crazy things that guy can do. I mean, he jumped about 25, 30 inches to reach the ball that was above his head that obviously Carr didn't think Irvin could get to, and he was able to tip it to himself, catch it, and speed his way into the end zone. Carr, you know, for his first game at CenturyLink, one of the loudest and toughest places to play, he gave his team a shot to win at the end of the day, and especially for a struggling 0-7 team, I don't know what more you can ask for of a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, you know, and the biggest thing is, you know, I know that, you know, for the Raiders, they play, you know, inspired football. And as you mentioned, you know, it isn't that they're getting blown out of football games. They're in every last one of these games. It's just a matter of just understanding how to win. And that's what Tony Sperano is trying to do, is teach these guys how to win. You have a strong nucleus of young players over the past couple of years. What I mean by that, we just talked about one in sensational rookie Derek Carr. Of course, on the defensive side, You have Khalil Mack that is just showing excellent wherewithal, always has a nose to the football and disturbance in the backfield. And then DJ Hayden coming back. And, of course, you know, a lot of the Raider Nation was looking to write him off because we haven't seen enough. But, you know, even bad calls, you know, penalty calls, he played inspired defense, which, you know, shows some greatness, you know, at the defensive backside. And, of course, Seal Moore, the other linebacker for the Oakland Raiders, is showing a lot of promise as well, leading the team in tackles. So you have a group of young men that you can actually build around, which is exciting. Of course, I can't leave out TJ Carey, the kickoff return. Of course, he had the fumble, you know, on the kickoff return, but he actually shows signs of some great football as well, along with Mike Rivera, who's in his second season and had two touchdowns from Derek Carr. So this team is on the rise. They just need to fill in, you know, fill in the gaps and fill in the spots with some great free agency, not with some of the duds that they've been having here over the past couple of years. And, you know, that would definitely get the Raider Nation excited.
And, Sean, I sent you some pictures, and I know you were curious to see how the Raider Nation was going to show up in CenturyLink. And, you know, they do. They travel well. Not only travel well, but they've got fans all over the country. So it's not a surprise that there were a good number of Raider fans around for this contest. And, you know, that they showed good support for their team, and, you know, they're just waiting for things to bounce right.
Yeah, you know, if there was any team, because, you know, I have to give, you know, credit and kudos to the Seattle Seahawks, of course, the 12th man developing that, you know, that moniker over the past 10 years of being a loud stadium to play in, you know, that's well-deserved. And, of course, you know, that's because there's a strong nucleus and a base up there in the Pacific Northwest that just can't be denied. I would say out of any of the other teams in the NFL would be able to do what the Raider Nation does. And that and what I mean by that is what you had just pointed out, is that they can put butts in the seats and, you know, definitely root their team on. And, of course, you know, there's none better than the Raider Nation. Of course, I'm sure when you looked around the stadium, all you saw were, you know, specks of silver and black, and then a strong section of silver and black. And then sometimes when the Raiders had the ball and they were getting a first down or two, it almost seemed like it was at a new.
That's wishful thinking on the neutral site part, but I'm not going to go that far by any means. But Actually, the main thing when I looked out from the broadcast booth was I saw wet fans. They, you know, the majority of them were getting rained on, although 70% they say are undercover. But I know that's not the case in the north and south end zones or the expensive seats down low, the 100 level. You pay the price and then you still get rained on. Go figure.
Yeah, 70% are covered when the rain is just coming straight down with no wind. But when there's a wind swirling around in the stadium, I would probably say that maybe 20% are covered if you're sitting up in the upper decks and above. But, you know, that takes away from, you know, the fun of the game, I'm sure. That's the reason why people sit down closer. And you want to be close to the noise. But yeah, I mean, definitely to what you were saying, you know, it was good to see Gorilla Rilla, you know, making the trip up there. And, you know, a couple of the other Black Hole Raider Nation, you know, just, I'm sure it was fun just rekindling what used to be a strong AFC West in the Seattle Seahawks.
And yeah, Sean, working for CBS Sports, and man, I even brought our Oregon Duck insider along for the ride, getting his first taste of CenturyLink Field and the NFL on CBS, and that's David Massey. Drove up from the Portland area to work, and, you know, of course, he had the fandom of the Raiders, so he was pulling for them. But we got to experience something you told me about earlier in the football season, that Kevin Harlan and Rich Gannon, the announcers, they do a little speech at the breakfast brunch catered meal, and they definitely did, and it was great to hear them talk and let everybody know that, hey, you guys are all a part of this. We're all in this together. If you guys have any ideas to make things better and things you can bring to the table, please don't hesitate. And then Rich got into the nuances of what we could see in the game today, and you know that the Raiders have a few things going for them and they're starting to get better, but it's a long uphill climb and this contest could get away from us quickly. But you know, it looked like it was going to, but in the end it didn't. It stayed a game, which I'm sure CBS was pleased with, so they could hopefully have a good amount of viewers hanging around till the very end. And it was just really cool. Kevin Harlan and former Raider Rich Gannon are just really cool guys and awesome to be able to talk to, and they're approachable. And you know, between myself, David Massey, and Chad Kramer, I think we held it down for him for CBS.
No doubt. You know, Kevin Harlan and are strong pillars for CBS, and of course they do build that teamwork, and you know, that's why there's such a great product that's put on, you know, on game day for CBS and that crew. I definitely look forward to working with them. And of course, you know, my group definitely, you know, was a great group. Kevin Burkhart, former on the double or a past with the Bless Express guest, along with John Lynch, a great group as well for Fox crew and broadcast that I was working with yesterday. So we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we are going to have a great and awesome legend to join us. That is Bob Robertson of the Washington State Cougars Broadcasting. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pains went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to Andro400.com. Andro400.com. Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe, with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, and let's go out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in a legend in the sports broadcasting world, and that is Bob Robertson. Bob, thanks so much for your time tonight.
It was good to be with you. That legend thing, that means old, does it not?
not in the slightest. That means much wisdom such as yourself.
Well, I guess it doesn't matter because you get old whether you want to or not. So,
well, hey, you know, I thought that was a great song coming back, Centuries. Centuries by Fall Out Boy. That's one of the songs we play. But, you know, when you're talking to somebody that has a lot of knowledge and a lot of wherewithal, such as yourself, you know, pioneering back, you know, to your broadcasting days in the Pacific Northwest, or actually in Western Washington, and then, of course, calling games for the Washington State Cougars, I believe, for some 40, it has to be 45-plus years, am I correct?
I think it's 48 now, I'm not doing the play-by-play anymore. I'm doing other things around the play-by-play, but I'm still with the group, and it's my 48th year.
And, of course, you've had some great games that you've called. Of course, I'm sure there are some fond memories as far as the Apple Cup are concerned. I'm sure that every time you you called one of those games, that those bring back some strong and fond memories and knowledge.
Oh, sure. Games like the 92 Blizzard Bowl with Drew Bledsoe as quarterback. And, you know, that was a wild Apple Cup game. And then the one a couple of years ago with Andrew Fernie. And I got a little notoriety out of that one because before the game I was a guest on the Husky pregame broadcast. And they asked me what I thought was going to happen in the game, make a prediction. I said, well, don't worry about it. Fernie's going to win it for the Cougars. And he did. He tied it at the end of the regulation time with a field goal and then kicked another one in overtime to win it. And I felt like, good grief, I should just retire now because I'll never come up with a better prediction than that.
Yeah, that was an awesome prediction there. And, of course, you've had some great guests to interview and to talk. Of course, there are a lot of players that have gone on to the NFL. But I do want to go back, and I want to harken back to the beginning of the season here, to where you interviewed one Keith Jackson, and I had the chance to listen.
Keith and I are longtime friends because our careers started about the same time.
Yeah, and I had a chance to listen to the interview, Bob, and for those of us, Sean and myself, who are aspiring to even do a tenth of what you have done in your lifetime, I was definitely touched, and it was heartfelt, you know, as far as listening to that interview and how emotional it was for you to actually be there with your longtime friend and interviewing.
Yeah, you know, and I think the thing that got to me the most was that Keith has kind of wrapped it up and retired, and everybody keeps asking me if I'm going to retire pretty soon. And I think just the thought that, you know, that somebody as good as Keith Jackson had finally called it quits as a regular worker and taking, you know, stepping away, and it just got kind of emotional after such a long time.
Now, Bob, with greats like yourself, Keith Jackson, looking back on all the years of Washington State University, what are some of the biggest things that stick out, maybe fondest memories or just biggest games?
Well, I mentioned a couple of them there with the Apple Cups, and any Apple Cup is always a big game, and it's even bigger if you win it, so you can kind of go back through and pick those out. But I think probably if there was to be one, and it's pretty hard when you've done more than 500 of them to pick one or two, but I would think that probably right at the top of the list would be that first Rose Bowl game in the 1997-98 Rose Bowl, because it had been 60-some years since the Cougars had even been to a Rose Bowl game. I mean, nobody alive at the time had been old enough to remember the game, because anybody who, you know, was only maybe 2 or 3 years old. So that one against the Michigan Rose Bowl game was probably, if I had to pick just one, that would be the one that would jump out at me.
What has it meant to you to be Washington Sportscaster of the Year, I believe, 15 times?
Well, I don't know whether it's 15 or 12. Somebody lost track of the numbers way back there someplace, and I'm not sure how many it was. Well, it's obviously when you're voted an honor like that by your peers, it's a very special honor, and you know, I really appreciated it, and I got a couple of free trips to North Carolina to pick up the award down there, and Then they decided that they brought me down there enough times, so I didn't get to go anymore. But it's always nice to get an honor from the folks that are in the business you're in, you know, your peers in the business. And I thank all of them who voted for me in those days for doing that. And it certainly was an honor, and it gave you a warm feeling when you got one.
Bob Robertson joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. Now, Bob, when you started this journey, in broadcasting, did you ever see yourself at this point here, of being in the game for so long? You'd mentioned 48 years with the Washington State Cougars. Of course, you started out doing a plethora of things. You know, started out with KSTW in Tacoma, then called TNT, KTNT. And then parlayed that into some Pacific Coast League baseball, and then hydroplaning and boxing and wrestling. Did you ever see yourself at this point in time in your career still in broadcasting?
I didn't really think that far ahead. I actually started in broadcasting. Well, as a sportscaster, at least, I started in broadcasting in the winter of 1948-49. I was supposed to report to play pro baseball in the spring. And I had the contract signed, and then during the winter, I got a call from KPQ in Wenatchee, and they asked me to come and take over as sports director. The guy that had been there had decided he didn't like snowy winters and gone back to California from whence he had come. And I had to decide then whether to go to broadcasting, which was an interest for me, or whether to go to baseball, which had always been what I thought was going to be my career. And I finally decided I'm gonna take a shot at the broadcasting, and I did. And I had no idea that I'd still be around every year until I was about 30. I thought, well, maybe I should go back and give the baseball a try and, you know, see if it would really work. But after 30, that was not a practical thought. And so I was pretty much bunkered down to be a broadcaster from that point on. And I didn't really think about it. I hoped that maybe I'd be a major league announcer. I was hoping to catch on with one of the major league franchises in baseball, but that didn't happen, and not everything worked out that way. But everything else worked out pretty well, and here I still am.
Now, of course, Bob, you are now, it's a now three-person broadcast for the Washington State Cougar football games. I believe Bud Namick and Jason Gesser join you. And in a trio of voiceofsports.com, do you ever see yourself actually learning some things from the younger guys? And of course, you have a lot to teach them. But, you know, is there a consistent learning curve as you continue on in broadcasting?
Well, you pick up new things. By the way, we're a four-member team. Don't forget Jessamyn McIntyre down on the sidelines.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. Yes.
Down there. She is awfully good because I have to point out that her dad is a football coach back on the East Coast with Stony Brook on Long Island. And so she grew up in a household with a football coach. And she comes up with some great insights from down there and asks the right questions. So there's a whole gang of us now, and Jerry Kylo is our engineer. He's been doing that for about 20 years, and he sits back in the corner and turns the dials and control knobs. So we're more than just a group of talkers in the booth. There's a five person crew there before we get all finished. But yeah, I pick up things like terminology, and of course, as the game changes so rapidly, you're always looking to try and stay up with it because things change, systems change, names of things change, and so on. And you're always trying to do that. I've always tried to keep up on the rule book because, of course, I was an official for 20 years or about thereabouts, and I got pretty much into what the rule book said. But of course, even that changes quite often. Every year there are some realignments of rules, and you have to keep up on those for the broadcasts. So you learn, that's what you do. You keep your eyes and ears open and try to learn as much as you can because all of these things are ever changing.
Now, one of the other things, Bob, is of course, this year, the Washington State Cougars have, you know, kind of been taking their lumps. And of course, this past weekend against USC, there was one of, you know, the quarterback going down, Connor Holiday. Of course, with a bright future ahead of him. It was at the time, is looking like he is definitely a late first round or second round pick. What is the latest on Connor Holiday and his return to playing football?
Well, I can only tell you what has been reported in the public media, because a lot of those things dealing with injuries and health of players and so on are not released by the university. But as I understand it, he has a broken fibula. He underwent surgery right after they got him on the stretcher and out of the stadium there on Saturday evening. And he went right across to the hospital and had the surgery done. That's my understanding. And now it's just a matter of you know, how badly it was broken and how well it heals up in the weeks ahead, because he'll want to get ready for all those NFL workouts and so forth later on as they make their decisions on who they're going to draft and in what round. But, yeah, his college career is obviously over with only three games to play. But hopefully his professional prospects are not over. I hope that he's able to come back at full strength and full speed. And he's done wondrous things with the new offense. But anybody who can go out there and throw for 734 yards in one game has to have something going for him that the pros will look at. So we keep our fingers crossed and say prayers for Connor Holiday. He's a very nice young man, and he's a, you know, kind of a homegrown guy coming out of Spokane. And so it's hoped for by all of us that he'll, you know, heal up and do it fairly quickly so he's ready to go in the spring.
Bob, in your illustrious broadcasting career, what are some of the things that you've learned over the years that maybe going back to your days with Wenatchee and your early days in your career that looking back now you think, man, if I would have only known this, or what's in your bag of tricks that maybe you didn't know back early on?
Well, I don't know there's any tricks. I was a sports nut to begin with. I played things when I was growing up, and as I had indicated earlier, I'd really hoped to be a professional baseball player, and that was where I was pointing to go when I got the chance to go into radio. And you know, there's no magic formula to it. You know, hard work is, I guess, the key. It's fun working hard when you enjoy what you're working on. Of course, that helped a lot. But I tried always to kind of stay, you know, a step ahead of the problems. I got into officiating football and basketball because I wanted to improve my ability to broadcast the games and understand what was going on, and I think that helped quite a bit. But it was just get out there and do the thing. If you have the dream, pursue the dream, because that's the only way you'll catch up to it. It's not going to come to you. At least I don't think very many get it that way. But my thing was just to, you know, move ahead and hope to make a good life out of it. And so far, I guess I've done that. So I'm perfectly content and happy with that. But I can't say enough for getting out there and practicing the craft, if that's what you want to do. Get out, and even if you have to go out and just record games play by play on a piece of tape. Television has presented another problem for guys who are in sports casting, because it has grown off in its own direction, and it's not the same as sitting down for a radio play by play where you're painting a picture for fans to see the game through your words. They have a picture. You have to come up with some other things to say and keep on top, so you have to keep up on the game. It's a constant learning process, and it's always fun to do it. I enjoy it. I kind of laughingly say I've never worked a day in my life, at least not very hard. It's all been fun and games for me, and I hope that anybody who goes into it has the same longevity and success that I've had, because I've been very happy with it.
Yeah, now, Bob, it does sound a little bit habitual. Of course, you know, talking to you before coming on the air, you're watching the Monday night game. Does it ever become tiresome to where you just don't want to analyze and break down games, or is it something that constantly stays with you over and over?
No, I think you described it very well when you said stays with you, because anytime I'm on a game, and I don't care if it's a Little League baseball game or if it's a Rose Bowl football game, I'm involved in it. I feel like I'm part of that thing, and I'm going to describe the action so you can see it at home in my words. and I'm going to try and give you the feel of the excitement of the game. The excitement of the game doesn't necessarily relate to how much crowd noise you have, for example. I mean, the game can be tremendously exciting, and there's nobody there with a few mothers and fathers watching their kids play. So I just enjoy it and feel like I'm part of it, like I'm right in the middle of it. In fact, the kind of backing off from doing the full play-by-play with the Cougars, I have always broadcast a game almost as if I'm playing it. I feel like I'm the middle linebacker or somebody out there, and I have always worked standing up and going at it hard and exciting. And I found that, in the last couple of years, that when we'd get to a timeout, I'd start looking around for a place to sit down and get a deep breath. And it kind of was coming to the point where, well, maybe you just should take it easy. Well, I don't want to take it easy because that wouldn't be me broadcasting the game. But it did slow me down a little bit. So I am content now to do a pre and mid and halftime and post game performance for the football team.
Now, Bob, I can definitely say you have a tremendous gift as far as broadcasting and calling the game. And, of course, hearkening back to the interview that I talked about before between you and Keith Jackson, one of the things Keith said was that, you know, just make sure that you keep it into perspective that you are calling the game for those players that are actually out there playing, and to make sure that it's not about you, the one who's, you know, sitting in the seat calling the game. I mean, is that something that you always take with you in preparation for your broadcasting?
Well, yes. When I'm going to do play-by-play, I have a spotting chart with names and numbers and information about the players on it and that sort of thing. And that's all, you know, part of the preparation of broadcasting the game. But the thing that I have to keep in mind is that I am the eyes of the audience. And I learned a very, very important lesson back before I was doing the Cougar games. I was doing high school games, and there was a little boy. He'd been blind from birth, but his dad used to bring him to the high school basketball games I was doing, just because he could sit in the crowd and feel the excitement of the game. But they used to come down and sit right next to me in the stands where I was broadcasting, because that way the little boy could see what was happening as well as why the crowd was excited, and he really enjoyed that. And I learned the lesson then that I was speaking to a sightless audience, people who couldn't see what was happening. And the whole idea became that I need to paint a picture for them with my words. And so that is pretty much the way I approached it, was always to think of that audience out there at the other end of the radio line, to have a picture painted for them and take care of the problem if they can't see what's happening. And then it always seemed to work out. People have always kind of thanked me for that, even though they didn't know that was how it all started.
Well, Bob, you've got an unmistakable voice, especially in the Pacific Northwest. Thank you so much for your time tonight. I had a pleasure meeting you on Saturday at Martin Stadium, and maybe we'll see what the weather has for us. We, you know, at the Apple Cup in a few weeks, and we survive the rain and fog on Saturday. And the Apple Cup, the last home game of the month, the last home game for the Cougars, it should be fun.
Yeah, it will be. An Apple Cup game is never dull. I don't think there's ever been a dull Apple Cup game, and I hope a lot of folks from both sides will be there to cheer on their respective teams and, of course, be a little louder for the Cougars. That's my team right now.
Bob, safe travels the next few weeks on the road, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the Apple Cup, sir.
Yeah, thanks,
Bob.
All
right, thank you, guys. Good talking to you. I hope the second half of the football game tonight is more exciting than the first, but I don't have to worry about that because I'm not working it.
Legendary Bob Robertson, thanks for your time tonight. A pleasure getting insight from Bob and everything he has learned in his years in broadcasting.
Yeah, don't forget now, you always try to remind people to always be a good sport, always, and I hope that works for you. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob. I was waiting for that. I was waiting for that quote right there. Thank you.
You got it. We nailed it.
Great words of wisdom from the wonderful voice of Bob Robertson.
Most definitely. Of course, if you want to learn a little bit more about Bob and the crew, of course, voiceofsports.com. voiceofsports.com. You can get all the insight and goings-on with Washington State Cougars football and one Bob Robertson as well.
You know, Sean, it's very interesting to me, and I'm sure you'll get a kick out of this as well, that we have a few ties with Bob Robertson that we didn't necessarily know about. Like, he had days at KSTW, and I was their final sports intern. Totally unrelated, but hey, we were both in the same building, at working for the same company. You and I were on the air at KLAY with the Tacoma Thunder.
That's right.
Bob's been doing PLU games on KLAY for years as well. So,
and of course, you know, not to mention, or to, let's not forget, in his days at Pacific Lutheran University, of course, our engineer Don Newson, also a PLU grad as well. So the ties keep going with one Bob Robertson, Sean Wally.
Yeah, and it's just amazing to think how many years Bob has been doing broadcasting on the microphone. And like he said, I've never worked a day in my life. And we get that with our show and with working the games we get to work. And it's just a matter of being able to turn it into that permanent, all-the-time gig.
Yeah, you know, take the opportunity that is given to you and enjoy what you do. That's one of the things that Bob was talking about. And, you know, as I had mentioned earlier, he has done a lot of things. You know, he called professional hockey, boxing, wrestling, hydroplane racing. Of course, we had, a hydroplane guest on a few weeks back, and soccer as well. And so, you know, whatever opportunity is given to him, you know, he has definitely taken that. And so that's something that I can take to just say, you know, man, whatever it is. Of course, you know, in a couple of weeks, I will be doing a cross country. I'll be calling cross country for the CIF here in California. And so, you know, that's something that I embrace as far as, you know, that task. And so should be a lot of fun.
And there's one thing that's stood out to me in speaking to Bob on Saturday morning at Martin Stadium, and he reiterated that tonight, is practice, practice, practice. And it doesn't matter what your craft is or what you want to be good at, the old adage, practice makes perfect.
Yeah, you know, and I, when talking with my father, you know, that's one of the things that he, you know, whenever he listens to the show here, he's very excited and joyous of where we have come, both you and me, Sean, for that matter. And, you know, he always goes back to the times when I was really little, when, you know, I could just, you know, I'm in the backyard and, you know, I'm going through all of the positions and, you know, I'm the play-by-play person. I'm the broadcaster. I'm doing everything, you know, and that, you know, that's when you know. That's when you know that you are, you know, destined to do something that is different than everybody else. And, you know, I can also remember when I was little, one of my neighbors used to take care of me. You know, Annie Wheatley is her name. Rest in peace. I used to go to her house and, you know, and wait till my mom came home from work. And one of the things we used to do, Sean, is, you know, I'm thinking, hey, I'm going to watch television. She's going to let me watch television and just unwind and rip and run through the house. But we used to sit around a radio and listen to, like, these old stories. And one of the things that I got from that, Sean, was this, is that before television, there was radio. And those people who, the narrators that told the story, had to paint a picture to keep you interested. And I remember listening to, like, the Lone Ranger and, you know, Annie Oakley types of, these stories on the radio, and it captured my attention. And what Bob was saying is that, you know, you have to paint that picture. That is the biggest thing is, you know, you better have a great brush. And that's a thing that you practice, I practice over and over again, but, you know, you have to continue to get better at that. And if we're going to get to the point of a Bob Robertson, which I would say is slim to none because, you know, he's a pioneer in the game. But, yeah, we would definitely have to do that repetition over and over again to make ourselves sharp.
And, Sean, before we close out show 77, I definitely want to mention, I don't know if you were able to notice, since you didn't get to sit down and watch the entire Seahawk Raider game as you were working in San Francisco, or Santa Clara, I guess I should say, but the Seahawks did an awesome thing. for Marysville Pilchuck. They had not only a moment of silence for the victims and the students, but they also had the MP logo on the back of their helmets. They put it on the Seahawk flags that the cheerleading dudes run across the field whenever they score, and they also handed out MP pins at the gates.
Yeah, I can't say enough on what the Seahawks organization, Pete Carroll, have done for Marysville Pilchuck High School in this tragic event that happened over the past week. You know, the Seattle Seahawks have embraced, you know, that feel as far as, you know, inviting them to practice. They were, you know, of course, you know, they're getting off the bus. I remember seeing them getting off the bus, walking into the Seahawks camp and in the indoor facility and having the whole Seahawks organization, you know, there and watching them practice and, you know, just keeping them motivated. This is a team that is ranked number 4 in the state in the WIAA. And, you know, they're embarking on playoffs here. And so, you know, the Seattle Seahawks have done a great, great job in, you know, in embracing this high school team. And, you know, and to do that, stay focused and continue your everyday goings on as far as playing NFL football games says a lot about the Seattle Seahawks and their organization and the strong foundation. And so, yeah, hats off to Seattle for that. And, you know, of course, it was a great football contest. And, you know, I'm still taking it on the chin. Of course, 30-24, it's a learning experience for my Raiders, but we'll definitely get better as the weeks go on. We are getting close to the end of the show here, show number 77. Guest Bob Robertson of the voicesofsports.com. Bob, definitely giving us the knowledge and the wisdom on this show today as far as broadcasting and some of the great things that he has done in his broadcasting history. Of course, we talked a lot about this past game up in the Pacific Northwest, the Oakland Raiders invading CenturyLink, of course, coming up short, losing 30-24. Show number 77 in the books. Be sure to go on to double-s-express.com to listen to all archived shows. And, of course, bbsradio.com/DSX. And you'll be able to check out our archives also on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. That's going to be it for show number 77. For Sean Wally, I'm Sean Boyd. Engineer Don Newsom, you've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.